make a start? Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 7, the Book of Yoga, Canto 2, the Parable of the Search for the Soul. Savitri is looking into herself in answer, in response to a high command, seeking for her soul. And the first stage of that quest is a dream, a vision, which reveals to her the cosmic past, the process of the creation of the world, and how this conscious being, half-conscious being, man, has emerged in it. And now there's a long section where this being, this conscious soul in the inconscious world, what is his life? First, Sri Aurobindo described the little surface, the life of the surface mind. He says, this is the little surface of man's life. But then he tells us he is this, and he is all the universe. We have vast ranges of our being, which we are not normally aware of at all. And within us is our true self, a hidden king, living deep within us, enjoying the honey of solitude. And into that soul, the immaculate, divine, all-wonderful, casts his splendor and his greatness and the light of self-creation in time's infinity. Man, in the world's life, works out the dreams of God. But then we read that everything is here in the human being. Even God's opposites. And we had we started to read this terrifying description of all the other powers that are lying there suppressed in the lower levels of our nature. So that not only rise up perverse drifts of thought and formidable formless influences, but there come presences and awful shapes, tremendous forms and faces mount dim steps up from our lower nature into the consciousness and stare at times into his living rooms. And sometimes we may call up these powerful forces if we need them for a moment's passionate work. But then the danger is that they may become used to us and we may become used to them. And once they've been aroused from sleep, we can't control them anymore. I think that's where we stopped, at the top of page 481. We can start reading again from line 249. Amitoch, would you begin?
Afflicting the daylight and alarming night, invading at will this outer tenement, the stark gloom's grisly dire inhabitants, mounting into God's light, all light perturbed. All they have touched or seen, they make their own. In nature's basement lodge, mind's passages fill. Disrupt thought's links and music's sequences. Break through the soul's stillness with the noise and cry, or they call the inhabitants of the abyss. invite the instincts to forbidden joys, a laughter wake of dread demoniac mirth, and with nether right or revel and revel shape life's throat. Impotent to quell his terrible prisoners, appalled the householder helpless sits above. Taken from him, his house is his no more. He is bound and forced, a victim of the plague, or allure, joys in the mad and mighty din. His nature's dangerous forces have arisen and hold at will a rebel's holiday.
Thank you. It seems that it is important that at this stage, when she is going to enter into her inner being, Savitri should know about these possibilities that are there in human nature, in universal nature. And perhaps it's important for us to know about them also. They can lead to a kind of possession, in which the householder sits helpless, aware of what is going on within him, but unable to control it. Taken from him, his house is his no more. He can no longer control even the actions of his body. He's bound and forced, a victim of the play. Or it may happen that we identify, we are attracted by all that riot and revel that's going on, and we join in this mad and mighty din. What has happened is that nature's dangerous forces have arisen in the individual and hold at will a rebel's holiday. They are just doing what they want with that poor being. Is it clear? Anything to ask? We can go on. You will read, please.
To attract darkness where they crouch in their prison from sight, they can be held no more. His nature's impulses are now his lords. Once quelled, awaiting spacious names and his eternal element.
Infernal
element, demon powers are there. Man's lower nature hides these awful guests. Their vast contagion greets sometimes man's world. An awful insurgence overpowers man's soul. And how the huge uprising roars, hail's companies are used to do their work. Into the old ways, the break out from all doors, invade with bloodlust and the will to slay, and fill with horror and carnage God's fair world. Death and his haunted stalk of victim earth, the terrible angel smites all at every door. An awful laughter mocks as the world's tale, and massacre and torture beam at heaven. All is the prey of the destroying force. Creation rocks and trembles top and base. This evil nature housed in human heart, a foreign inhabitant or dangerous guest. The soul that harbors, he can dislodge. Expel the householder, possesses the house. An opposite potency, contradicting God. A momentary evil's almightiness has struggled the straight path of nature's art. It intimates.
It imitates.
It imitates the Godhead it denies, puts on his figure and assumes his face. A many-chain creator and destroyer, this can abolish man and will his world. But there is a guardian power, there are hands that save, calm eyes divine, regard the human scene.
Thank you. So it's not only that these dreadful powers can surge up and possess an individual. Sometimes this vast contagion grips a whole society, a whole group of people, you know. And then that contagion can be so strong that it can overpower the individual soul, and this uprising of these darker powers spreads. The hell's companies break out from all doors into the earthways and fill with horror and carnage God's fair world. And he says that this evil nature housed in human hearts is a dangerous guest. If the soul allows it, the soul that harbors it can be dislodged, driven out. The householder, the individual being, can be expelled. The whole individual being is possessed and used by that adverse power. And when this contagion spreads and affects the world, it seems like an opposite potency contradicting God. It momentarily, it seems almighty, and it assumes the place of God. This is what God wants, no? Puts on his figure, assumes his face. It takes that place of the ruler of the world. He says, a Manichaean creator and destroyer. This is a reference to the old Manichaean philosophy or faith, which believed that there were two demiurges of equal power, a god of evil and a god of good, and that they were equally powerful, and that the whole world's life is just the play between these two figures. So if that evil God is there and is equal in power to the God of good and light, this can abolish man, annul his world, destroy it completely. We know that Sri Aurobindo and Mother foresaw the possibility of such an annulling of man's world at the time of the Second World War, and they set aside all the other work they were doing to combat that possibility, because Sri Aurobindo said that it would have delayed the evolutionary process for 1,000 years or maybe more. And he gives us this reassurance that there is a guardian power. There are hands that save, calm eyes divine, regard the human scene. Fortunately, it is so, because otherwise human beings in their ignorance would not be able to combat these forces.
Your torture green at heaven, and massacre and torture green at heaven.
Yes, you know, it's as if somebody, some dreadful spirit, is enjoying all this. An awful laughter is there, mocking all this suffering that's going on in the world. And massacre and torture. These things are happening now in the world, no? And it's as if they are laughing at God. Look at us. We can do what we want.
So this really sets up a duality.
Yes.
And yet, at the same time, we are to see a whole. So can you put this into the context of holding this duality at the same time? Where does it fit in the big picture?
Well, I think our belief is that it's not a Manichaean situation, that the powers of evil and the power of good are not equal, that there is a power of truth which will prevail. At least that's what Sri Aurobindo tells us in Book 1, Canto 4, The Secret Knowledge. He says, even when all that we can see is drift and bale, terrible things happening, and a kind of drift, no direction, still, there are, now I don't remember the next line, a mighty something watches over all. There are these guardian hands. And there's a destiny. This earth, this world has a destiny, a purpose which will prevail against all this. So it means, and perhaps that's what he's going to elaborate in the next section, that these things have a place for a time in the evolutionary process. But they can't, it's only a momentary almightiness. It's not going to last longer. Let's see if I can find that line.
I have a question. When Sri Aurobindo wrote this, the parallel of search of the soul?
So far as we know, it is in about 1947.
1947? Hmm. But it tells some, Mother said, in agenda 46, 47, and 48 years is very, very dark.
Yes. And several times we find Sri Aurobindo referring to that darkness. Yes. This is one of the places. Yes.
Is the Independence Day
also of the 47? Yes. 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 No, it's very interesting to see the process of the composition of this poem. You know, that the first known version that we have that's been discovered, it dates from 1916, the end of 1916. And then we know that he worked on it quite a bit and then saw that it wasn't working out the way he wanted. And he changed his whole intention regarding... No, I'm talking now about the 1920s. And he took it up again. He said he kept the best of the old, and he took it up again. His second aim, he took it as a means of ascension and a field of experimentation to see how far poetry could be written from the yogic consciousness. So every time that he reached a new level or had realized and established a new level in the yogic consciousness, he went back and rewrote it again to see if he could lift the poetry up to a higher level. And that process went on for many years. It went on until 1944, in fact, that he completed the first part of the poem. That's up to the end of Book 3. That part has been written and rewritten and rewritten. But then he seems to have decided that it is possible to complete the poem and publish the poem. And so the second part, which we are in now, he took it up, and that was completed in the mid-1940s. And this material, in the rest of the poem, we find here and there lines from the very earliest version. That's what I'm doing at the moment. I'm comparing the very earliest version with this version. But this whole book 7, apart from the very first canto, that was based on early versions, all the other 6 cantos he's composed completely new, apparently in 1947. So that's how I could say the date. Yeah. Yes, Don.
You mentioned something dark happening in 1947.
Ganga Lakshmi said that in the agenda, Mother has said something about 1947.
That Shobindo signed these 3 aspects, 46, 47, 48. Mm. It was that in 49, it changed also. Mm. It was in 1961 agenda. I listened yesterday, actually, but at this moment, 1 year before.
Yes.
Mother knew Shobindo Roy. 49. I put in the
yes, I think that things went on getting worse. You know, he has written at one point in 1948 that things are getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and I cannot attend to Savitri. There's no chance of it. And at a certain point, as Ganga Lakshmi says, as Mother has told us, Sri Aurobindo saw that the only way to combat this worsening process would be for him to leave the body. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah, this year, the years when the Cold War mentality set in
yes.
both camps, wired for the Cold War, and looking at the other, the absolute enemy to the Manichaean
yes. way of looking at things. Yes.
Possibility of coexistence, mm. one has to win over the other.
Yes.
And for the dangerous moment,
yes.
I think the crisis of the missiles in Cuba,
well, that came later. I think Sri Aurobindo left at the time of the Korean War. No, that
yeah.
was when he was coming. Yeah.
So. Still in power. Mm. And we have McCarthy at the beginning.
Yes.
The mentality was really oriented towards a confrontation.
Yes.
With atomic bombs.
Yes. Yes.
With whose guidance?
When nothing we can see but drift and bail, a mighty guidance leads us still through all.
And page?
It's page 59. And a little further up the page, it says, "One who has shaped this world is ever its Lord. Our errors are his steps upon the way. He works through the fierce vicissitudes of our lives. He works through the hard breath of battle and toil. He works through our sins and sorrows and our tears. His knowledge overrules our nescience. Whatever the appearance we must bear, whatever our strong ills and present fate, when nothing we can see but drift and bail, a mighty guidance leads us still through all." And you can enjoy homework. You can go and back to page 59 and read what he says next, which is the answer to Paula's question.
To feel
and love the God of beauty and good in the ugly and the evil, mm-hmm. and still yearn in utter love to heal it of its ugliness and its evil.
Mm.
This is true virtue and morality.
This is true virtue and morality. So we'll move on.
All the world's possibilities in man are waiting as the tree waits in its seed. His past lives in him. It drives his future space. His presence acts, fashion his coming fate. The unborn gods hide in his house of life. The demons of the unknown overshadow his mind, casting their dreams into life moulds of thought. The moulds in which his mind builds out its world. His mind creates around him its universe. All that has been renews in him its birth. All that can be is figured in his soul. Issuing in deeds, its course on the roads of the world, obscure to the interpreting reason's guess, lines of the secret purpose of the gods.
Yes, thank you. We're on page 482. We just read the past passage after the break. As I mentioned last week, there are several places in the poem where Sri Aurobindo outlines what is the role of humanity in the whole unfolding and purpose and fulfillment of the universe. So here he casts some light on that. All the possibilities of this world, they are coded in to human beings. They are waiting in us as the possibility of a tree is waiting in that little seed, which if it gets planted in the right soil can grow. No? There's the traditional idea of karma, that we are controlled, determined by what has happened to us and what we have done in the past. So here he says, his past. This is not only the individual past, this is the whole past of evolution up to this point. No? The universal past lives in him, in man, in humanity. And that past is driving the pace of the future. But what we do in the present, what we choose to do now, shapes our future, our coming fate. It's not only that we are determined by the past, we can do things now which will determine our future. We may not see the results of what we do in this life, but we can prepare our future possibilities by the choices that we make now. And the divine powers that have not yet manifested, they are hiding in our house of life. Those possibilities are within us. And then he says, the demons of the unknown overshadow his mind. We were just reading about the demons. It's a different spelling, but it's a crucial difference in meaning. The demons are these powers of falsehood and darkness, opposed to the divine will, which are lodged in the lower levels of consciousness. The demons are guiding spirits, which bring inspiration and guidance, speak through our soul. No? So these demons who are preparing all kinds of things that we know nothing about, they overshadow our minds and cast their dreams of the future, into live molds of thought. And these molds are the shape the way that mind, human mind, builds out its world. It's very interesting if we look at the history of science, for example, the way that some individuals seem to have received in the midst of all their human confusion, dreams, suggestions, which enabled them to completely change our view of our world. If we think of Copernicus and Kepler and Newton and other people, we can trace this again and again. Somebody has written a book about them called The Sleepwalkers. It's as if these people were walking in their sleep, discovering things without knowing really how they did it. You know? And that's an example of these demons of the unknown overshadowing the human mind and preparing things for the future. You know? Because the human mind creates its universe around it. Which is why Sri Aurobindo has said that the only solution for the problems that we see is a change of consciousness. Our mind will go on repeating the same old problems. It can't find, or it finds solutions, but the solutions just create more problems, similar problems. So the only way, since our mind creates our universe, is to open up the mind to a higher kind of consciousness that can build a better universe than the one that we've got at the moment, the one that we experience at the moment. But at the same time, everything that has been in it in the past renews in him its birth. It comes back. It gets repeated. Gets repeated to be dealt with. And all that can be is figured in his soul. We are carrying within us images of the higher possibilities of the future. And we notice these things. All human beings really are carrying images of a better future. Sri Aurobindo speaks of the human aspiration that comes back again and again and again and again. That's the sign of these, all that can be is imaged in our souls. And when that those things that can be, those unknown things, if they are expressed through the soul, through the mind, they get expressed in deeds, in actions. And those actions create grooves. It scores lines that will be followed on the roads of the world. Those lines are obscure to us, to the reason we can't find out why those lines, those things are there. But they are lines of the secret purpose of the gods, of the divine powers that are guiding this world towards its intended fulfillment. Manoha.
In strange directions runs the intricate plan. Held back from human foresight is the end, and the far intention of some ordering will, or the order of life's arbitrary chance, finds out its settled poise and fated hour. Our surface watched in vain by reason's gaze, invaded by the impromptus of the unseen, helpless records the accidents of time, the involuntary turns and leaps of life. Only a little of us foresees its steps. Only a little has will and purpose at pace. A vast subliminal is man's measureless part. The dim subconscious is his cavern base. Abolished vainly in the walks of time, our past lives
lives
still in our unconscious selves, and by the weight of its hidden influences is shaped our future self-discovery. Thus all is an inevitable change, and yet a serious series of accidents.
Thank you.
In line 330 says, the past shaped our future self-discovery. We can't do much about the past. The past is past.
By the weight of its hidden influences, it shaped our future self-discovery. But earlier on, he had said, his present's acts fashion his coming fate. So what comes up in us today is shaped by the past. No, it's our past is living on in our unconscious selves. And there's a weight of its influence which shapes our future self-discovery. But we can start our future self-discovery right here and now, no? By discerning those influences that come from the past and making our choices here and now. He makes a distinction. It's a quite an important distinction in Sri Aurobindo's vision, is the difference between the subconscious, the unconscious self, and the subliminal. The subliminal, it's what is below our threshold of consciousness, but it's not of our surface consciousness, our surface mental consciousness, but it's not necessarily unconscious. In fact, it extends from the subconscious levels up to the superconscious levels. And it's all behind the surface. And this is what we can access to help us in our future's self-discovery.
The description of a dim subconscious is his cavern base. The image for me is of an individual with a deep cave, like a cave, a cavern, and the base is a
surrounded,
like it doesn't go anywhere else. You're pretty much at the bottom. Yeah.
Yes, and this cave is not only individual. Of course, each of us has our own cave, but there's this universal cave in which all the high possibilities are contained. And there's this Vedic legend which says that all these powers of light, all the divine possibilities, it's as if they have been stolen and hidden in this cave. And the work of the seeker, the rishi, it is to, with the help of first of intuition, I think, and then to discover where they are, the treasures, and then with the help of the higher powers to break into that cave and set all those possibilities free. And then the rivers of divine energy will pour down and everything will be different. So then this is true individually, but it's also true universally.
At this point, it's also important when we discover this past cavern experience or things, then to offer it to the divine, as Sri Aurobindo also, when we come to the root, we have to offer it to the light. We cannot, how you say, solve the problem by ourselves. And often the Western therapists think they can solve the problem by themselves. We have to offer it to the light so that it can be transformed and renewed.
The principle of the Western psychoanalysis was to discover things that are hidden and bring them into the light of consciousness. And in some cases, occasionally, it can happen that that in itself cures. So then they thought that is the way to cure all such problems. But that's not Sri Aurobindo's view, no, but that's what Western psychoanalysis is, the principle it's based on. That bringing things into awareness helps them to, because they unconscious things become conscious. Yes.
I want to tell you some. When you describe before you talk now, I have dream when I receive my name Ganga Lakshmi from Champakal. I have dream. I enter in the cavern, and before I enter, I have test outside about the low vital, low mind, low physical. And when I enter, who he opened, what you tell the river Ganga, incredible. He opened very, very high cavern, a golden inside. Also in the floor, in the wall, is incredible. But open the
roof.
And water going, everything through this water going outside. And I have, I don't explain the end, but it's incredible. But test.
Before.
Low mind, low. After I receive my name.
Afterwards you received your name. You had the dream first.
After. When I received Ganga Lakshmi.
When you, first you received the name.
1990.
Yeah. So that's a very wonderful symbolic vision.
It's incredible. And testing the low vital, it turns out, is always coming in my mind when I am in the life of Orville. No compromise, but for something. Sorry.
So let us go on with this. Do you like to read? No? Ganga Lakshmi, would you read?
Yes.
Thus all is an inevitable chain, and yet a series seems of accidents. Things happen to us, we think they happen by chance. But in fact, everything is linked to something before. We read on from there, the unremembering hours.
The unremembering hours repeat the old acts. Our dead past run, our the future's uncle kings, and drags back the new nature's glorious time. Or from its bare corpse, all ghosts arise, all thoughts, all longings, that passions live again, recure in sleep, or move the waking man, the words that force the barrier of the lips, the deeds that suddenly start and overleap. His head of reason and his guardian will. An old self lurks in the new self we are. Hardly we escape from what we once have been. In the dim gleams of habit passages, in the subconscious darkening corridors, all things are carried by the porter nails, and nothing checked by subterranean mind, and studied by the guardian of the door, and passed by a blind instinctive memory. the old gang dismiss all council past of self. Nothing is really back that that once had lived in dim tunnels of the world's being and is ours. The old jet nature still survives. The corpse of its slain thoughts raise their edge and visit mind's nocturnal walks in sleep. Its stifled impulse breath and move and rise all keeps a phantom immortality.
Thank you. It's very interesting how often we find correspondences between what we read in Savitri and what we've read the previous week in The Life Divine. So on last Wednesday, we were reading about the need for disengaging the spiritual being within us, because that's the next step in our evolution. But at the same time, Sri Aurobindo explained that this cannot happen quickly, because this whole nature, this whole past that we are carrying with us, has to be spiritualized, has to be transformed. So all we're carrying all these things along with us. Our dead past is clinging around our anchor, the ankles of our future, holding us back. But this is the work. This is the work that has to be done. You know? It's not that anybody is going to touch us with a magic wand and turn us into supermen. Perhaps that may happen eventually, but now we are here to do the work. You know? So here he's describing, giving us a very detailed picture of all the things that have to be dealt with and that must be coming up in our lives all the time and needing to be dealt with. And we shouldn't feel frustrated and upset at ourselves or guilty or anything like that. These things are coming up, as he said, to be offered. They come back in sleep, or sometimes they make us do things in our waking life and we wonder, why did I say that? Why did I do that? Our reason wouldn't have allowed us. Our guardian will wouldn't have allowed us. But we do them. And he says it's very difficult to escape what we once have been. And then he describes why these old habits are there in the subconscious.
He has used the word subterranean mind.
Subterranean, yes. So it's even, it's underground mind. It's not the surface mind that we're aware of. It's buried. So these things are carried by the nerves, a lot of memories. We have often said that we're carrying the whole history of the universe in our bodies. The nerves are carrying all this, lots of memories there. And that comes up, and this underground mind doesn't bother to check whether the nervous should be allowed to carry that. And there are some guardians of the doors, but it seems they are quite lazy. Past, they get passed by blind instinctive memory. Oh yes, this is familiar. We know this fellow. So those people, this old gang of things that we've overthrown and dismissed, they come with new passports. Or they're the old, cancelled passports they're still using, but the people on the door don't notice. Nothing is wholly dead that once had lived. So these things, the old rejected nature, still survives in dim tunnels of the world's being and in ours. All these things are not wholly dead. They come up. It's all keeping a phantom immortality. Ghosts are there.
Where and how is this that you just described as subliminal?
Well, it's the lowest level of the subliminal.
I heard about that this nothing is wholly dead that once had lived. Ne? Is there a possibility to transform this old stuff?
Yes, that's why it's coming up. Has to be transformed.
You can never change it. That's one another way of thinking, but it can be transformed. Ne? That it gets lifted up in the light.
That's the characteristic of the truth consciousness. The mind can't transform it. No? But when we are able to lift things up into the truth consciousness, falsehood gets back its forgotten truth. No? Since everything has come from truth, no? Turns back to its forgotten truth.
So it is the mind what is seeing it cannot be changed. Or it's really,
the mind can also be changed. But the mind, this surface mind that we have, doesn't have the power to correct these things. Yes, Prasha?
I think the Guru starts this passage by saying that man creates certain modes.
Yes.
Modes of thinking and modes of mind.
Yes.
I still think that humans can't change to a great extent. Unless something is divine.
Yes, yeah, these are the molds.
Yeah. Through the mold, he develops his universe.
Yes, yes.
And that is why
the molds have to be changed.
Molds have to be changed. And if molds cannot be changed, then the same view of the universe.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I was relating to the education that in education also, Mother Ashwara. Someone says that change of character, no, or about our habits, it's very difficult, but it's not impossible.
Yes.
Means what we have, the idea in mind that this is like this and this can never.
This is human nature, can't be changed. Mm-hmm. No, have to accept it.
So
we don't have to accept that idea.
Yeah, and then they give us the guidance. For the education, means five aspects, no? Physical,
vital, mental, psychic, and spiritual.
So Mother also gives the guidance from the very early age that have to guide a soul, guide a child to develop in that, to transform and to develop in that character.
Yes, but this is the great problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem that put my feet on the path. I saw that we see small children, they seem to be innocent and pure, and they know what is right for them to do, no?
Yes.
And they have great sympathy for others.
Yeah.
How could we help children to continue to grow in that inner light when all the teachers and all the parents are slaves of the ignorance? How can we do it? So what the opportunity that Mother gave us in Oroville when she started Oroville School, it was that we didn't think of ourselves as teachers. No, we had to think of ourselves as students, that we are also here to pursue this physical, vital, mental, psychic, and eventually spiritual education. No. And when we can do that along with the children, that's the best way we can help them. Of course, Mother says we can also, if we have goodwill, we can open and ask for help from the higher consciousness to give us guidance. But she asks us always to observe the children what can we discern the movements of the soul and the way that the soul wants to guide this child, and then we can support that. And that demands a completely different education system, which hasn't been established yet in the ashram and hasn't yet been established here in Oroville. No? It's something for the future. It's one of the dreams of the future. We can only aim at that.
From yesterday, because we had something about agitation workshop, so this idea was going in my mind about education. And I felt that no one is able to really get that what is the really the ideal and the aim. And that's why I was connecting from here to there, that how Mother and Sri Aurobindo show us the way from the very early age, and that's also easy when we begin from birth, no? Even before birth.
Even before birth,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But that has... It's missing, I think.
Anyway, since you are working in the school and you're thinking about things, you have to know the whole of Mother's volume 12 of Mother's collected works off by heart. Because there's so much indication she has given there for education at different ages, what one should be aiming at, and what is the proper attitude for a good attitude for the teacher to have, and so on. And right at the very end, there's a talk. I think perhaps it's even the last talk from, is it possibly February 73? Kirit and a small group of people, they used to meet Mother, people from the school. And they asked her, how can we help you in your work? This talk is so marvelous. So she said, well, obviously the best way is by finding your psychic being. But then she explains. Yeah.
What is that reference again?
It's in volume 12 towards the end. I'm not sure whether it's the very last. There's at the end there's a series of talks with teachers from the school. And the question is, how can we help you in your work?
I remember an early talk where she said the most useful work to be done is to bring out the eternal word under a new form adapted to the present mentality.
That's one of her early talks in Paris, yes.
So
and that's what she was doing. That's what she was doing, exactly.
What I want to experiment with is this savitri thing of commenting myself, just reading it out loud and then see what comes into my mind. I always thought we didn't have the right to comment on it because she said only I can comment on Savitri, only I can explain Savitri.
No, you always have to look very carefully what she says. She said that Savitri is spiritual knowledge and spiritual experience. A large part of it can be understood by the mind, but a large part of it can only be understood through spiritual experience. And at present, I don't see anybody apart from myself who has the spiritual experience to explain Savitri. That's you find the quote. This is what she said. But this putting the old knowledge or the higher knowledge in forms that can be understood by the modern mind. This is what both Sri Aurobindo and the mother were doing throughout their lives. No? And, well, for the other part, what I always have to emphasize is that, yes, there's the basis of spiritual experience is here, and this... Each of us has to find our own contact, ourselves. What we can do in these groups, in the Thursday class, in this class, is we can see how we can use our minds to understand as much as possible of what Sri Aurobindo has made accessible to the mind. What has he said? He wanted there to be an audience who could understand his words. He wrote all this for a purpose. No. So as much as we can understand, we can do it. But we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that there are vast oceans of spiritual experience behind all this, which are not accessible to our minds so easily. We have to find deeper ways to understand and experience them. And Mother's given guidance about that. She said, read a little at a time. Don't try to understand mentally. Keep yourself blank. Yes. I think we'll stop there for today. We have to go back to the same three at the beginning of the canto. Because this whole second part, long second part of the canto, Mother has not read any of the passages.
I might just say one thing while she's doing that. This morning I was raking the leaves under the banyan tree, and it occurred to me that I had this question about savitri in my mind, that only she could comment, or only she could explain it, and I thought, oh, maybe there's a difference between explaining it in its true sense, that was the expression she was.
Yes, of course.
And having one's own experience of it. Because the other day, I think for the first time, I heard the mother herself say that savitri, read it, and every time it'll be a new experience. So actually, whether we can explain it in its true sense in the ultimate, as only she could do, we can have some experience of it, even if it's only, hey, I don't understand that.
Yes.
Because then if you don't understand, if you reread it, something will happen in the brain cells.
Yes.
So that I thought was fascinating. I
want
to try to research that in my experience.
Thank you, Patty.
About a ground where live and nourish me, a mighty voice in radiant water speaks. And the voice her body became a star and a raging molten statue, a motionless palm. A stone of one lit by an amethyst soul. Her heart listened to its slow why comest thou to this dumb, death-bound earth, O spirit, O immortal energy, if it was to nurse grief in a helpless heart? Oh, with hard, tearless eyes, awake thy mood. Rise, O soul.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.